Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudhirayet Nashtaprayeshu Apadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Hare Krishna, nice to see all of you again. Welcome back from spring break. Today's verse is from Canto 3, Chapter 22, Text 19. This is one of those verses that's a little longer than the purport, so actually it was read already yesterday. Except for the last paragraph of the purport, which we'll read today. So we'll do it a little different. We're still going to do the Sanskrit, so we all have an opportunity to chant it. But we'll skip the word for word in translation and go straight to the end of the purport after. Ato bhajishye samayena sadvim. Ato bhajishye samayena sadvim. Yavat Tejo bhi brihad atmano me. Yavat tejo bhi brihad atmano me. Ato dharman paramhamsa. Ato dharman paramahamsya mukhan. Shukla proktan bahumanya vihimshan. Shukla proktan bahumanya vihimshan. Someone like to chant? Ato bhajishe samayena sadvin. Ato dharmam paramahamsya mukhyan. Proktan bahu manye vimishan. Ato bhajishye samayena sadvim. Vibhyad atmano me. Students. Ato bhajishye samayena sadvim. Yavat tejo bhi brihad atmano me. Ato dharman paramahamsya mukhyan. La proktan bahu manye vihimshan. Dharman mahamsya mukhyan. Can we go to the last paragraph of the purport, starting with after fulfilling? While he's pulling that up, a little context. It's been a couple of weeks since you've been here for class. Kardama Muni, great sage, was in the last chapter, had darshan of the Lord, and the Lord told him that this is what's going to happen. You will be approached by Swayambhuva Manu, and the Manu's service to mankind is really, he's like the original father in a sense, and from him, then subsequent children come who populate the earth and so on and so forth. And so his daughter, Devahuti, would approach Kardama Muni to offer his daughter's hand in marriage to Kardama Muni. And the Lord said, please accept. You will have 10 children, and your 10th child will actually be me as the incarnation of Kapila Dev. So now in this chapter, this scenario has happened, the discussion has taken place, and Kardama Muni, he's responded, and he said, okay, I accept. I accept your daughter, Devahuti, as my wife. But the condition is that after we have children, you see, I'm a Muni, I'm a saint, I'm already here doing my tapasya, I'm already trying to meditate on the Lord, I'm trying to live a renounced life. But I understand that this is the desire of Krishna, I'll take it as so, but afterwards I want to just take sannyas. I want to go back to this renounced order of life. So this is what's being described in this portion of the purport. After fulfilling his responsibility to produce a nice child, one should take sannyas and engage in the perfectional Paramahamsa stage. Paramahamsa refers to the most highly elevated perfectional stage of life. There are four stages within sannyas life, and Paramahamsa is the highest order. The Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Paramahamsa Samhita, the treatise for the highest class of human beings. The Paramahamsa is free from envy and other stages. Even in the householder stage of life, there is competition and envy. But since the activities of the human being in the Paramahamsa stage are completely engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service, there's no scope for envy. In the same order as Kardama Muni, about 100 years ago, Thakur Bhaktivinoda also wanted to beget a child who could preach the philosophy and teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the fullest extent. By his prayers to the Lord, he had as his child Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, who at the present moment is preaching the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya throughout the entire world through his bona fide disciples. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Bastyaschide Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Jai Vanchakalpa Tarupyasya Kripa Sindhubhyevaja Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So there's this concept of ashram, which is spoken about. Have you heard of this word, ashram? What's an ashram? What do you think an ashram is? Like a mini temple. Yeah, there's this, definitely this kind of ashram. We have a men's ashram here. We have a ladies' ashram there. But there's also defined in a different way in terms of scope of life. Have you heard of this word, varna and ashram? Varna ashram? Any familiarity with the word varna? Any guesses what the word varna might mean? Varna? Varna means essentially, in simplest form, occupation. An ashram refers to one stage of life in a really simplistic way of thinking of it. Varna and ashram. So it's a word that means one's occupation and one stage of life. And here, the stage of life of sannyas is mentioned. This is known as the renounced stage of life, the last stage of life. And so stages of life are categorized in four ways. The student life, the brahmachari, the grihastha, the married family householder, the vanaprastha, who is, literally means one who goes to the forest of the vana, but one who is retired, and the sannyas, or complete renounced life. And then within this framework, there's also different occupations that fall into different categories. And the idea behind the whole system is that if someone is in an occupation that's suited to their nature, suited to their psychology, suited to what's natural for them, if they're in a stage of life that's natural for them, then it's very easy to practice Krishna consciousness. There's less stress coming from life situations when we're situated comfortably in these aspects. That's the basic idea. And this is what Kardama Muni is saying. I'm on this path to renunciation, but I see the service that's at hand, and I will always accept the service, especially because it was ordered by the Lord himself. So yes, we'll have a family, and I'll help Swayambhuva Manu in this, you know, propagation of mankind. But please, afterwards, I want to continue with my renounced order of life, because for me, he's saying that's what's most conducive for my spiritual life. That's what I can see as a very healthy place for me. And so it's a concept, this class is not about Varnashram, it's not about what are the different ashrams and varnas, but I wanted to bring this up because it gives some context as to what's here in the purport. There is something that's very important, though, that's mentioned here about this Paramahamsa stage, which is a type of sannyas or a high category of sannyas. I'll read this line. The Paramahamsa is free from envy. In other stages, even in the householder stage of life, there is competition and envy. But since the activities of the human being in the Paramahamsa stage are completely engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service, there is no scope for envy. So today's class is about envy. And I want to speak about envy and how envy is one of the greatest opponents. It's one of the greatest roadblocks to love, to bhakti. And it's something that's almost seems innately natural to every single person due to our conditioning of so many experiences over lifetimes in this material world. And I want to also speak about how to overcome it. And I think maybe it's something that's not spoken about enough. It's a little bit of an elephant in the room. It's something everyone experiences, but such an ugly emotion that no one wants to talk about it. So I want to start with a small story to illustrate what this looks like, yeah? This is an old folk story that I heard. There was once a very poor man, and he didn't have enough food to supply to his family. He didn't have enough space in his home. He was really struggling. So one day he went to the forest, and he was in the forest. He sat under a tree, and he was thinking, what do I do? What do I do? How do I fix my situation? And all of a sudden, he heard a voice. And this voice said, I'm the owner of this forest. I'm the forest spirit. I'm very powerful. And I can see that you're in a lot of poverty. I can see that you've come here, and I can hear that you're asking for some help. Because the good thing is that I've decided to help you out. And I can give you whatever you want. So the man was very excited. This is the answer to my prayers. He said, I'll give you whatever you wish under one condition. He said, whatever I give you, your neighbor will get double. Whatever I give you, your neighbor will get twice as much. And he said, that's fine. I'm so happy. Of course. Yes, yes. Great. I can finally get out of my impoverished condition. It didn't matter to him. My neighbor gets double what I get. No problem. He goes, I will take your blessing, O forest spirit. So he went home. He was so happy. And he said, dear forest spirit, I want a bigger house. Can you make my house a little bigger? And all of a sudden, his house grew in size. There were three more rooms. He was so excited. He took his family. They wanted each room. They were so happy the whole evening. This was the greatest treasure, the greatest thing. This forest spirit just came into my life. The next morning, he woke up. He went outside, he looked up, and he saw his neighbor's house grew double the size of his. And he thought, okay, I'm not going to think about it very much. But, you know, he didn't do anything. I found the forest spirit. I've worked so hard. This is my endeavor. But he gets so much more. Anyways, you know what? Dear forest spirit, and this forest spirit comes back. You know, I'm really feeling like I may have more children, I have parents, I have in-laws, what am I going to do? I need a house that's three stories tall. All of a sudden, he had a house three stories tall. He was so excited. He took his whole family, they went up each story, so many new rooms. Life was good. And he got up at night to use the bathroom. And he was a little tired. Turned the light on, he looks outside the window. His neighbor had a house six stories tall. And he's thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do now? He's got a house six stories tall. So he goes back to bed. He's really, he didn't do anything. You know, I've worked so hard. I have such a hard life. Now he has a house six stories tall, a whole mansion. So the next day, he went into the field and he had a small plot of land. And he said, you know what, forest spirit, my land is too small. I want land 20 times bigger. He had land 20 times bigger, just like that. But this time he didn't wait to look across the street. And he looked across the street and he saw all the trees started breaking down. Everything started disappearing. The land came up. His neighbor had a whole village practically. And then it was just direct competition. It didn't matter what he had anymore. So he thought about this for a good week. He kept thinking about, what am I going to ask next? What am I going to ask next? He wasn't happy. The more he got, the more he wasn't happy. All he could think about was his neighbor and what his neighbor had more. But he came up with an idea after 1 week. Any guesses what he went to the forest spirit for next? What do you think? Make the other person have bad stuff. Ooh, you guys are onto something. Yeah, what do you think? Went to return the riches back. What do you think? You're creative. To make a meteor come. Okay, yeah. So he went back to the forest spirit and he said, "Dear forest spirit, I have just one more request." The forest spirit said, "What's left?" He said, "I want you to make me blind in one eye." You see what's coming? And he went back home and he knew exactly with his one eye what he was looking for. And he saw his neighbor blind in both eyes. And for the first time, he felt a little bit of this happiness. A little bit of this horrible happiness. I mean, you just cringe when you hear it. And this is a story to, I mean, you can just tell immediately, this is the effect of comparison. This is the effect of envy. I mean, it's a pleasure born of envy. It's not real happiness. It's a demoniac happiness. I mean, this is not the kind of happiness you want to feel. So this is comparison, right? This is comparison. Comparison is a breeding ground for envy. It's really an ugly feeling. I really think that, especially in today's society, comparison is something that's very hard to escape. It's very hard to have an account on social media and not feel comparison to someone else. It's almost designed for this purpose, even though there's many good things that can come out of such tools. It's very hard. Comparison can look, you know, you compare one another based on success, based of what you have, wealth, just like this man in the forest. You know, I'm not as attractive as this person. I'm not as popular as this person. Comparison, it appears so much in devotional circles too. You know, this person, he plays better Bhajanga than me. I don't have as nice of a voice as he does. You know, they get more attention from my Guru Maharaj than I do. It comes in so many ways. And often we hide this. We hold it deep in our heart. We don't want anyone to see it. We don't want to deal with it. We just store it. We cover it up. We put a blanket over it. I'm giving these examples as things that I feel, things that I've felt before. I'm in no way exempt from this. It's so real for me. But what's the result of it? I mean, what was the result for the forest man? It wasn't good. I mean, nothing could really make him happy. He had to take his own eye to feel a little bit of happiness, right? It brings misery, it brings frustration, and ultimately it brings a lack of vision. Comparison, envy, you start to become blind to what you actually have, right? It's the irony of the story is he wanted to go blind, but actually internally he was blind to the amazing things that happened in his life. There was no gratitude for what came to him. There was only seeing what someone else had that he didn't have. This is the effect of comparison. And it leads to envy. Envy is, to define it, it's feeling a little unhappy, a little miserable, a little uncomfortable when you see the happiness of someone else, right? When you see the success or the glory that someone else gets, it's a little bit of a feeling of, why not me? Why them? In Sanskrit, this is known as matsara. It means being disturbed by someone else's progress. And for a devotee, it's one of the greatest roadblocks. It's very, very difficult to make progress. It's impossible to make progress if we keep this within our heart. And it's so dangerous, just like the story shows, that it can start very subtly. It can start with a little bit of discomfort or uneasiness that someone has more than us, and it can spiral and turn to a point where we feel happy when that person starts to suffer or loses what they have, and we have a little more than them. So I'm not saying all this just to bring up like a really negative atmosphere. I'm actually going to get to a positive place with all of this. But I want to dive a little bit into why is envy an anarta or unwanted quality that is very bad for an aspiring devotee. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he recommended three principles for spiritual progress. So to progress spiritually, he would say Nama Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva, Jiva Doya. So taste for the holy name, chanting the holy name constantly, Kirtaniya Sadahari, constantly chanting, always remembering Krishna, never forgetting him. Vaishnav Seva, serving devotees with love, with affection, because you care about them. You want to see them happy. And Jiva Doya, to think of others' welfare. It means compassion for living entities, thinking a little bit compassionately. But if there's envy in the heart, all three pillars of these spiritual progress given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are destroyed. Because how can we actually chant if we're envious? We're envious, we think ill of others, we create offenses to other people. We may even speak poorly of them. And we know from the offenses to the holy name, that the worst possible offense is to commit aparad to another Vaishnava. The holy name cannot appear. How can we serve Vaishnavas if there's envy? How can we actually want to do something for someone else lovingly if we are happy at their misery or unhappy at their success? Right? How can we want to feel real compassion for another person if already we want what they have? So these very fundamental principles of Krishna consciousness, they can't truly be there if there's envy in the heart. And so if we see it for what it is, like a disease, we see it that it's something that's accumulated for so many lifetimes. It's not necessarily our fault. It's not something to blame ourselves. It's the condition of being in this material world. Just like so many conditions are there. And we have to take a medicine for it, just like any. You know, the best thing about knowing that you're sick is that you know there's a possibility of getting better. So the way to counteract it, the general principle is that we have to understand us, ourselves, truly, who we actually are. The soul does not have envy. The soul's quality is bliss, it's happiness, it's contentment. It said the nature of the soul is naturally happy and jubilant. Anandamaya Vyasat. The nature of the soul is naturally happy, is naturally jubilant. It's naturally blissful. This is called ananda. And in the spiritual world, there's no such thing as envy. This is the predominant quality, it's ananda. And so if we connect with the spiritual reality, if we connect with the spiritual world regularly, then we'd start to develop spiritual qualities. Those qualities predominate in our consciousness, not things like envy, greed, anger, lust. Right? So I'll start this way. Have you heard of this word anarta? Have you heard of this word? Anyone want to define anarta? What does anarta mean? So things like anger, lust, any other thoughts, what the word anarta is defined as? Anyone heard of this word artha before? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Artha means wealth. It means wealth. Anartha means without wealth. Yeah, these are qualities that rob us of the greatest wealth. Or they're without real value. When there's no wealth, there's no value. If someone's thinking that money equals value. So these are qualities that have no value. And I used to hear, and I still do, and I will get to this, that if you just keep chanting, all your anartas will go away. Have you heard this? you just keep chanting, all your narcissists will go away. I never believed it. And I would think, why don't I believe this? Because it comes from Shastra, it must be true. But I never believed it. I would see people who chant for years, but they still are very critical. They still may have envy, they may have anger. And I would think, well, maybe this is not the way to remove an artist. There has to be another way. Maybe it just has to be tackled head on, you know, just there has to be another process. And I thought maybe this idea of chanting your anartas away is spiritual bypassing. It's just a way of using a spiritual idea to bypass emotional work that has to be done. And I came to the conclusion the answer is, well, it's both. We have to recognize that the process of devotional service is what clears anartas from the heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it himself. It has to be true. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Right, this chanting of the Maha Mantra clears the dust accumulated from the hearts, from years and years of existence in the material world. It's very clear, it's there. But there's a key to it though, a very important part of it. And the key is that this chanting has to be done in a way that pleases Krishna. It has to be done with absorption. If I take a sponge and I soak it in clean water, a clean sponge and clean water, and I wring out the sponge, clean water will come out. If I take the same sponge and I absorb it in dirty water and I wring it out, dirty water will come out. What I mean by this is that if you chant in an absorbed way, if you chant in a way that's pleasing to Krishna, that's focused, then you're touching a reality that's beyond the material world. This name, these words, Hare Krishna, the names of Krishna, they're transcendental. That means they don't have qualities of this material world. They're from a place that envy doesn't exist, lust doesn't exist, anger doesn't exist. They're from a place that real happiness exists. So when we chant properly, we chant in an absorbed way, we pick up these qualities. And therefore, these qualities that are of the material world, they're not there anymore. We replace them with something that's grounded in the spiritual reality. Does that make sense? Whereas if I take that same sponge, imagine your mind like a sponge, and I'm chanting, but that my mind is not with the mantra, it's not with the transcendental sound vibration, which naturally has these spiritual qualities, but it's still in this material world. I may be chanting, but I'm still going to pick up qualities from this material world. And I can go on for years that way, but I may still pick up envy. I may still pick up greed, lust, anger. And this is how it actually works. This is how the effect of chanting does clear anartas, but it has to be done in a way that we pick up spiritual qualities, that we connect with the potency of the holy name. It's non-different than Krishna, who's non-different than his qualities. And we can have those qualities also, but it has to be, we have to connect on that platform. It's also said from hearing Bhagavatam and serving devotees, this also clears anartas. There's a verse that we chant every Bhagavatam class that describes this, right? Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu, right? We said this morning. Nityam bhagavata sevaya, bhagavati utamashloke, bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. So nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. All the inauspicious gunk that's going on, that comes out. If you hear regularly, you serve pure devotees who have this Bhagavatam within their heart, and then love for Krishna, real love comes, real happiness, not the kind of, you know, sad happiness that the forest man felt when he saw someone else's suffering, when he saw someone else had less than him, but a real happiness that is actually happy for others, is happy when others are happy. This brings great happiness. But on the other hand, there has to be introspection and there has to be an antidote, a practice that we can do to eradicate envy specifically from our heart. And I was thinking about this and I came across a very famous Bhagavad Gita verse. Maybe you've heard it. Tesham satuta yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam. Tadhami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. And Krishna says, if you're constantly devoted to me, you're serving me with love, you're doing the process of bhakti yoga for me, you're chanting to please me, you're serving Vaishnavas to please me, then I give you the understanding by which to come to me. And I took this to mean that if we're really trying sincerely in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna reveals things that we need to work on. Krishna reveals the things that are blocking us from coming to him. And one of those things, a very important thing, is envy. So if we notice there's envy in our heart, take it as Krishna's mercy. It's Krishna showing you that this is there and there's a way to counteract it, right? Envy is, the snake is sort of like a symbol of envy. And when there's a venomous snake bite, there's an antidote that can save one's life. So this antidote for envy, it's appreciation. It's appreciation for devotees. Appreciation for those that we may feel envious of. And I know it sounds a little cliche, but it's very true, and it's very hard sometimes. It can be very hard. You know, even if we don't see eye to eye with somebody else, are we able to still appreciate something about them? Right? Someone might think the earth is flat, and you think the earth is round. Do you still appreciate them, even though it's such a big difference for you? Someone might have voted for Trump and you voted for Biden. Do you still appreciate them? You know, you might laugh, but this is just, how many times do you see people fighting over politics, devotees fighting over politics? They can't see eye to eye. Krishna still loves them. Krishna doesn't look on the material platform of what decisions we make necessarily. He loves us for who we are. But do we love everybody the way the Lord loves everybody? Perhaps not. I mean, it can get more and more difficult. Maybe someone has one view on whether women should be gurus and someone has another view. Do we still love them even if they see it differently, if we don't agree with them? Appreciation is really, it's really the antidote for envy. It's the antidote for comparison. And it's not easy. There is a pastime I shared of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a few months ago of Maharaj Prataparudra, the king of Puri. And he tried so many ways to get the love of Krishna, or love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu seemingly rejected him so many times. And finally, when Mahaprabhu accepted him, Mahaprabhu embraced him, Mahaprabhu cried tears on him. And the devotees were in ecstasy. They were so happy to see him get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. They weren't thinking, I've been with Lord Chaitanya for so many years. I've been a devotee for so many years. Here comes this king, this worldly person. He gets embraced by Mahaprabhu, and tears are streaming down Mahaprabhu's eyes on his body. What about me? What about me? They don't think he's materialistic. I'm renounced. That they appreciate him. They appreciate that he gets to have this moment. He gets to have this mercy from the Lord. He gets to have this glory. And it makes them so happy. This is the antidote, to appreciate devotees. And you'll see it again and again and again in Bhagavatam and especially Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the pastimes of Mahaprabhu show very specifically how a devotee should act. And it's always appreciating, appreciating. And sometimes you see devotees or personalities in these scriptures who have the opposite mentality, who have a critical mindset, and you see how they're transformed. And the transformation is always that they end up becoming appreciative of devotees. And there are so many different types of people in these scriptures, all kinds of people who wear ashes in their body and tiger skin, and people who are really high-class brahmanas, and people of different castes and different religions. But there's always an element of appreciation. So this is a real testament of our spiritual progress. If we can see other devotees' success, if we can see their glory, if we can see them being glorified publicly, and we feel happy for them, we feel genuine happiness, we feel appreciation for them, we can say, okay, I think I'm making some progress in spiritual life. And if we see this, if we see their success, we hear about it, and it makes us a little uncomfortable, this might be a sign that there may be some envy, that maybe we should think in a more appreciative way. Maybe there has to be a higher quality of sadhana, a higher quality of hearing to eradicate this. It's a very, very clear benchmark. But please don't be discouraged. I tell this to myself also. Just like any any sickness that's there, there's a medicine. And the more we are aware of what's going on within our heart, the more we can rectify it, the more we can heal it, and the more we can make this place a space that Krishna would want to reside. Yeah? Thank you. Hare Krishna. We have time for questions, by the way. But we can wait a minute or two, that's fine. Thanks, Mom. Hare Krishna. Any thoughts from the Vaishnavas still here? Any comments on this topic? I know it's such a big topic, and I'm sure all of you have a lot more realization than I do. Would love to hear from a few devotees.
You're welcome. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, would you like to comment a few words?
Just have to apologize for arriving so late. But I appreciate your emphasis on appreciation. That I see in myself, I sometimes fall into critical mode.
Yeah.
Rather than appreciate the positive aspect of any particular devotee. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Mother Agatmika.
Thank you. You really.
It's. This is. You have to put
very,
it close.
Very
I think
it's an important topic.
Thank you.
I was thinking also a symptom of envy is when we criticize.
Mm.
We criticize someone. We want to see them lower. We want to put ourselves up. By putting them lower, we're thinking we're putting ourselves higher. Golly. It's so obvious. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're really good. And I like that. The antidote is to appreciate.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Yeah. I heard that from Radhanath Maharaj. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I just, it's a little challenging to speak on the topic, and I just want to make it very clear. It's just sharing what I've heard, not necessarily what I do all the time. It's I would sometimes see envy come, you know, if I travel and I go to a festival all of a sudden, and there's so many devotees, and all of a sudden I go from, you know, 0 to 100. I'm around just a few people every day and doing my routine, and now I'm there with so many. And then you see people, and you see what they're doing, and then it's. And then I realize at that point, maybe this is something I have to consciously work on more often, you know, so I'm not comparing myself so frequently. And I wanted to make it also a point. Maybe I didn't make it enough, but. Yeah, the culture we live in society today is so comparison driven. It's really hard to avoid it, you know. You want to remain connected, you want to remain on social media, you want to know what others are up to. But then platforms like this, they're just breeding grounds for seeing other people and comparing yourself, and you start to forget. And this is one thing I saw in the story, or the story that I told was, you know, it's a simple folk story, but it's so true. You start to become blind to what you already have, you know. And think of stories like Kolavecha Sridhar, and it's just like, just want Lord Chaitanya. They're so happy with having nothing, and they're so blissful, you know. It's, anyways, I can go on and on, but it becomes a spiral. And it's just something just to be aware of so much. Anyways, thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Yes, please, again.
Someone were to think, I'm just going to stay away and just be, you know, execute my devotional service on my own, do my job, whatever, you know, and really kind of stay away because it's always bringing up stuff, you know, when I associate with devotees. But that's the thing that we have to face.
Yeah, yeah.
The things come up.
Yeah.
You know, the anarthas.
Yeah.
And it's the association of devotees that will bring that out.
Yeah.
I heard just like when you make ghee, it comes to the point where the solids, impurities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you must scoop them off with a ladle or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just in this comparison of getting free from anarthas, the ladle is other devotees. That's how we can, you know, by associating with advanced devotees and appreciating their input, you know, then we can.
Yeah, you get uplifted. You get uplifted. Yeah, totally. If I had more time, I was going to tell them another story, which I was thinking in relation to this, of Lord Ram when he was sent to exile and Mantara's influence on Kaikeyi, who was not at the time envious of Ram. When she first heard of Ram's coronation, she was happy. But Mantara, being envious, thinking also of herself, if Ram is king, Bharat and Kaikeyi get pushed to the side, I don't no longer have an influence. So then influences Kaikeyi in this way, and through enough of her sort of manipulated talk and endeavors, tricks the mind of Kaikeyi to think in such a way. It breeds from envy. It breeds from, you know, what about me? I want to be on top. I want the other person to be lower. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.